operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop.
All right, welcome back to the Comic Book Revolution podcast after a bit of a hiatus.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit of a hiatus. Some might say a year and a half is a little bit of a hiatus. But, you know, hey, everything's relative, right?
Nobody's counting.
No one's counting. As always, I am Rock. By my side, I have a new partner in crime, Steven.
That's right.
Yes, and what you should know about Steven, this is interesting. He has, it's true, he has a Mickey Mouse voodoo doll. He does. It's true, and it will be apparent as we go through the podcast why he has this.
That is a gross misrepresentation of my feelings of our future overlords, Disney Enterprises or whatever they're called. The Walt Disney Company,
that's
my
right.
dad.
That's right.
I don't need their people coming after me.
No, they'll parachute attorneys over our studio. all right, my man. What I was thinking we would tackle in this podcast, we would do a little bit of news. Really, I wanted to talk about Bendis hopping over to DC, not just going to DC, but handling what is, after Batman, the crown jewel of the company, Superman.
That's right.
And
big news.
After we do that, talk a little bit about Star Wars. We're not going to rehash whether it's good or bad as far as from a creative standpoint. I mean, suffice it to say, I wasn't blown away with it. And Steven, I don't think you were particularly blown away with it. I mean, we didn't hate it, but we weren't like, I need to see this two more times.
Yeah, you could say that. I was decidedly less negative on it than you were, but that is the case with most things.
I was going to say, isn't that pretty much how it works for everything?
Yeah, I think so.
But I figured it would be, it's interesting because now that we're past the reviews and debating the movie itself, you're seeing a lot of talk now centering more on the business side of things because it is Walt Disney and they are the biggest company out there as far as the entertainment industry is, especially after acquiring Fox. I don't think it's up to debate anymore. They're now the 800-pound gorilla. They move the market. So now it's interesting to see from a business standpoint, where do we go? Whether you like the movie or not, there are certain numbers to crunch to look at if we're going in the right direction or not. Mm-hmm. The company, not we, even though, you know, I feel like I'm part of the company.
Yeah.
In full disclosure, I've been a big Disney fan since I was a little kid, and as you look around the podcast studio, you see a Space Mountain poster, you see a monorail going through by the Magic Kingdom through the Walt Disney World poster. There's a Star Wars poster as well. So, and there's an orange bird sitting behind Steven. And for true Disney fans, we know the orange bird resides where? In Adventureland. He is an icon. Steven is not buying it. So, anyhow. So, you know, I have a fan investment with Disney. Mm-hmm. And I also have a financial investment because I own stock. So, I really do want them to do well. I don't want to lose money.
So he's one of the lucky ones who will always make money no matter what.
That's right. No matter if I like what they're doing or not. As long as it makes money, I'm okay with it.
And full disclosure, I do not dislike Disney. I'm not a fan of some of their practices and creative choices, but like everybody who is alive today, Disney was a huge part of my childhood. I love Pixar.
Yep.
I like the Marvel movies.
Yep.
Their animated stuff is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. The entire way through. So, you know, I don't need them taking over everything I love, but, you know, I don't hate them.
That's right. Is what it is. And we're also going to review a couple of comics. Yes. We'll review from the House of the Mouse. We'll review, and I picked these issues at random. I just kind of felt like we should get a nice little cross-section of what both companies are offering. It's not necessarily what I run out to read immediately, but it's good to give everyone a flavor of what's going on with a wide variety of titles. And I think we picked a wide variety of genres and intended targets with these titles.
Yeah, I'd say so.
We've got Avengers number 678. We have Captain Marvel 128.
Why are you laughing like
that? I don't know. We have Moon Girl, and we've dropped Devil Dinosaur, which makes me sad, because really the only reason why I would pick up this comic is because of Devil Dinosaur, one of Jack Kirby's greatest creations. Mm-hmm. Moon Girl number 27. And we've got, from DC, we have a new comic, and you know I cannot pass up on a number one issue. I don't care. It could be the worst garbage in the world, and everyone knows it's garbage going in. I would still buy it and still read it because it's a number one issue. I don't know. It's a bizarre compulsion I have.
That's your greatest weakness.
I need help. That is number Silencer, the Silencer number one. We're also going to do the Flash Annual number one. We're going to do Metal. Dark Knight's Metal, sorry, my bad, number five. And then we'll wrap it up with the title that Steven made me read.
That's right.
Justice League, Doom Patrol, number one. As people know, one reason why Steven and I work well together when reviewing comics is because Steven likes comics that are well-written and sell like crap. Mm-hmm. And I like comics that are more mainstream, that sell well. Not always. There are some I like that sell poorly, too. Legion of Superheroes, may you rest in peace. Still my favorite comic ever. So, but in general, I don't dabble with the more Vertigo-esque titles, which I think you probably do.
Yeah, you could say that. Some of my all-time favorites came from that imprint. So, you know, 100 Bullets, Why the Last Man, things like that. I know everybody's waiting to say, what about Preacher? And we're not going to go into that today.
Amen. Okay. Let's start this off. Let's just talk first, Bendis. Bendis is taking over the Superman franchise, at least the Superman title, okay? Not Action Comics.
He is, yeah.
It's Action, right? Mm-hmm. Who's Action taking over Superman? Superman? Both.
Yeah.
Both. Mm-hmm. I have no choice but to get Bendis Superman. They're not even offering those of us who would rather eat dog crap than read Bendis. They're not giving us any option of getting a Bendis-free Superman comic. Like, at least they, in the past, they've been like, hey, you don't like writer A that I were giving on this title. We'll give you an alternative with the same character. You know, they do that with Batman and Detective Comics. It's not uncommon that, you know, on the Avengers franchise, you know, while Avengers might be written by one, they'll give you, like, a branch-off adventure title that written
just,
by someone else.
Branch-off.
Right.
Just one?
Just one. Multiple now, but...
right.
But you at least get an alternative, mm-hmm. and I'm not getting that.
No. Basically, I mean, from what he's saying, because it came from an interview in Forbes, I believe.
Yes.
The big breakout, this is what he's doing interview. Right. It's going to be two different things from what he's saying. The Action Comics is going to be the Superman... like classic Superman title, and that's going to continue on from 1000, which is his big debut as a Superman writer. And then, well, he's doing a miniseries first. He's doing a 6-issue miniseries called Man of Steel, which, you know, it...
Does it follow Superman's adventures growing up in the hard luck neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen, where he has to fight on the streets to survive?
I don't. It's going to have something to do with his origin, but it's not going to be a retelling. That's what he said. They're not junking anything that Tomasi and Gleason have done, or that Johns has done, or whatever the new continuity is that they set up is. But there's going to be somebody who has a connection to his past. And, of course, when I think Man of Steel, I try not to think of the Zack Snyder movie. I try to think of the classic Superman
yes.
origin story. One
indeed.
Of the best. And then from that, he's going to take over. And Action Comics, the classic Superman, and then the Superman title is going to be more about the world of Superman, like stuff at the Daily Planet and how...
Street level. Printing newspapers and making deliveries. Muggings.
Hey, you know what? That'd be more suited for him than
it
writing a Superman title.
It would be. It absolutely would be.
Yeah.
Negotiating cable TV deals.
Hey, I could see Perry White doing that.
I gotta admit, Bendis, you've seen my hardcover collection. I have his entire run of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's fantastic. I also have all of his Ultimate Spider-Man up until the idiotic decision to kill Peter Parker. We won't get into that now. But I have it all up until that point. Mm-hmm. I have been, in the past, a huge Brian Bendis fan. It's a kind of like is kind of like when Tarantino first came out. I liked his movies a lot.
Yeah.
And after seeing about the third movie, I was like, I get it. I see what's going on here. I'm going to see the same movie over and over again. You might change the setting, and you might change a couple of themes here, but I'm basically going to watch the same movie over and over again. Well, that's kind of what with Bendis. It was kind of like, yeah, I see what you're doing. And once you see what he's doing, you predict everything coming before it happens, and it's not so interesting. And I also think that Bendis really shines. The reason why he did so well with Ultimate Spider-Man, mm-hmm. with Daredevil, is because he really shines with low-level, street-level, urban-based characters. That's where he does really, really well.
Right.
And he struggles terribly with team comics. Mm-hmm. He just can't do it. Maybe he just can't. You give him more than two characters, his head explodes.
Yeah.
And he struggles with anything that is heavy with science fiction. It's just not his thing. It's just not his thing, which is fine.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. 100%.
And Superman, to me, is about as sci-fi as you're going to get in the DCU.
Some might say it's almost mythic.
Exactly. So I just don't think this is the right title for him. I get why they can't resist putting him on it, because even though the guy's like 55 years old now and past his prime, you know, when Kansas City Chiefs trade for Joe Montana, they ain't putting him on the bench.
Yeah.
It's Joe Montana, no matter if he can't play anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, you sign Brian Bendis, doesn't matter if he's over the hill, and his best days are behind him, and he hasn't sold worth a damn in forever, which is true. Right. He just hasn't.
Yeah.
He's way past his prime. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to sign Brian Bendis and put him on Mystic U.
No.
You're just not going to do it.
Not unless he wants to do it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're going to put him on a big name title. It's just what you're going to do. So I get why they're doing it. I think they picked the wrong character. Obviously, if you want to put him on a flagship title, you obviously, I think it's painfully obvious, you put him on Batman.
Yeah.
I don't see how DC, well, it means Dan Didio, who is an absolute idiot, let's be honest, that guy, I don't know how he still has a job. He's got to be the worst editor-in-chief of my lifetime.
Yeah.
How you get Bendis and don't put him on Batman is utterly beyond me. It just is. It's utterly beyond me. That Batman universe is tailor-made. Mm-hmm. It's tailor-made for Bendis's talents.
And Bendis has said multiple times that he has a Batman story he wants to tell.
Thank you. So why you put him on a title that doesn't match his skills? I mean, the part of an editor, editor-in-chief, you know what his main job is? Recruit talent.
Mm-hmm.
And then to match the talent onto titles that best accentuate their skills,
mm-hmm.
not accentuate their weaknesses. It's like a head coach of a team.
Yeah. That's right.
You put the players in positions to accentuate their skills, mm-hmm. not their weaknesses. This is kind of basic.
Yeah.
So I'm mystified at this decision. Put them on Batman. You get the big name with a big name title, and mm-hmm. I think it would really be a better read, and honestly, I would probably buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would, even despite my not liking Bendis for so long.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good pairing that I would buy it. Put him on Green Arrow. See that? But he's not as big of a character. He would be a great fit for Green Arrow, but obviously that doesn't make the splash of Bendis being on Batman or Superman.
True.
Still a great fit.
Yeah, and I think they could, I mean, the comics market is crap anyway, but I think they could
yes.
they could make a big, like, oh, Brian Bendis on Green Arrow, come check it out. And some people, the five people who buy comics now would probably show up to buy that.
Yeah, agreed. So, I agree.
And, I mean, I know why he's not on Batman, because they looked at Tom King and Tom King shook his head no.
Yeah.
And said, you're going to let me have Batman.
Yeah. Yep.
And they looked at Batman's sales numbers.
Yeah.
And said, oh, okay, fine. We'll just let you do what you're doing.
Right.
And they looked at Scott Snyder, and Scott Snyder said, no.
No.
And they said, well, okay, he's a mainstay, so
right.
we'll let him have it. And because I think Snyder writes two Batman titles.
He does.
And then there's Detective Comics,
mm-hmm.
which I think is like a group effort or something like that.
Correct.
So he still could have fit in there.
He could have.
But, I mean, for once, they decided not to oversaturate Batman.
No, look, and it makes sense because, let's be honest, who do you want to make happier? The guy who's older and past his prime and doesn't sell big numbers, or the two young studs
mm-hmm.
who are just hitting their prime, who do post big sales numbers. I mean, sorry. I mean, Scott Snyder and Tom King, they're younger, they're in their prime, and they post big numbers. I mean, I'm going to give them priority over Bendis. If that's what they want, I'm going to priority to those guys.
And Bendis still has a, you know, he can still write Batman
at some point, or a miniseries, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
There's plenty of opportunity there.
As far as we know, he's only got two titles, so there's room for one more.
Right, exactly.
Just had to give it to him.
The best news about everything is that the underwear goes back on the outside of the costume.
Yes. I was so excited when I saw that picture. I was like, yes, finally.
Me too. I thought that was awesome.
The trunks are back.
Amen to that, brother. All right. The other bit of news, Star Wars. Let's talk Star Wars for a second.
All right.
Now, listen. What's interesting about Star Wars is it has not dominated the box office like the Force Awakens did.
It still made a crap ton of money.
Oh, don't get me wrong. We're going to talk about what Disney might want to do financially. Make no mistake. Make no mistake, Disney's making money. And these people that think, oh, Disney shouldn't have bought Star Wars for $4 billion, they're idiots. First of all, they didn't just get Star Wars.
They've already made
that money back. So. Thank you. They didn't just get Star Wars. They got Star Wars and Indiana Jones, first of all. Okay, so you paid $4 billion for two big properties, and they have yet to unveil all the stuff with Indiana Jones, which they are going to. Trust me, they will. They've already got a themed restaurant at Disney Springs and Walt Disney World for Indiana Jones, and they've got some stuff over on the West Coast at Disneyland for Indiana Jones. Trust me, they're just scratching the surface with that. Okay, so these people are saying they shouldn't. They paid too much at $4 billion. Are they gonna make their money? Like, they're idiots. $4 billion was a great purchase for Star Wars and for Indiana Jones. Period. End of story. So we're not saying it was a bad purchase. It was a great purchase. Mm-hmm. It just was.
Yeah.
And while we're worried about the numbers here, we're gonna break the numbers down. Most studios would kill to have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Would kill to have this problem.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, but having said that, latest movie really had a drop off between the first and second week. It was a big drop off.
Yeah.
That was a concern after having such a massive drop off between week one and week two. That shows the movie doesn't have legs. And it doesn't have the legs that The Force Awakens had.
Right.
And another concern is it's now a global box office. Domestic, you want to do all domestically, obviously, sure. But really, it's a global box office more than ever. Mm-hmm. And the straw that mixes that drink is China.
Yeah.
Right after us. Because China's the number two market for movies. So you got to do well in China. You just have to. I mean, it's the reason why you keep getting stupid Transformer movies, because the number two market likes them.
Yep. The fun fact, the number five highest grossing movie internationally last year was a movie that only released in China.
Really? That's shocking, isn't
it? Either 5 or 6. It's called Wolf Warrior 2. If you have not heard of it, well, you did now.
You do now.
And China only made that a massive success.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's a huge market. You got to be there.
There's a lot of money on that table.
I know that The Last Jedi has fallen about $200 million short of analysts' expectations for domestic. That's a big number. I mean, it's made a lot of money, but that's still a... That's still a big number.
Yep.
They're expecting it to end around $625 million, which you know is well short of what The Force Awakens did. You've got in China, the number two market, it fell 92% first to second week, went from 28.7 million to 2.4 million.
It didn't even open at number one.
No,
the weekend it came out.
No, it's going to finish China with less than 50 million, which ranks it beneath Valerian and Geostorm. Valerian had 62 million, Geostorm 65 million in China. Mm. Below those two movies, and those two movies were bombs.
Oh yeah. Historic bomb.
Yeah, exactly. So you got, by comparison, you know, people say, well, maybe Star Wars hasn't always done well. Well, hold on. By comparison, The Force Awakens totaled $124 million, which is not great. And Rogue One earned $69 million. While those aren't great numbers, the fact is, Last Jedi did remarkably less than The Force Awakens. It even did less than Rogue One.
And Rogue One had a marketable Chinese actor, Donnie Yen.
Thank you. So that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then some people are saying, well, China is not well versed with Star Wars. They don't have the bond with Star Wars. They don't have the history of Star Wars. Well, guess what? Let me debunk that right now. Mm-hmm. There are other movie franchises with complete unfamiliarity in China. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Fast and the Furious franchise. The first five films were never released theatrically in China. Mm-hmm. Never. But number seven and number eight became the two biggest Hollywood imports ever in China. Yep. $390 million for Furious 7, $392 million for Fate of the Furious. So similarly, the original three Jurassic Park movies mm-hmm. never released in China. But Jurassic World earned $228 million. Right. So two franchises, zero history in China.
Yeah.
Came over there late in the game and scored big numbers. Mm-hmm. So this whole no familiarity with the franchise, sorry. Fast and the Furious, Jurassic Park / World has proven that's garbage. You can still do well.
Marvel?
Yep. Exactly.
People in America didn't know who Iron Man was, so nobody in China knew who Iron Man was, but I think Iron Man 3 still did pretty well in China.
Right.
And they just keep doing better and better over there.
Right. Last Jedi is currently at $1.3 billion worldwide, well below the $2.06 billion of Force Awakens. You adjust the numbers for inflation, and it paints an even less impressive picture. Again,
as adjusting still, does.
As adjusting always will do.
Yes.
But if you adjust the figures, it puts Star Wars, A New Hope, number one at $1.6 billion,
right.
roughly. It puts Star Wars Force Awakens at number two with $992 million. It puts Empire Strikes Back just behind it at number three at $901 million.
Mm-hmm.
It puts Return of the Jedi at four at $863 million. And number five would go to, episode one, Phantom Menace at $829 million. And then the number six spot, Star Wars Last Jedi, $612
million. Wow.
So, that's, again, you know, you're now in the number five, you're in the number six spot, mm-hmm. and it doesn't look as impressive. You're now coming below prequels. It's not the trajectory that Disney, I guarantee you, Disney, this is not the trajectory they want to see.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
It's just not. It's not. On top of this, compounding the issue is then they release their, as a stockholder, I mean, it's online, anyone can get it, but I got it sent to me, their financials for 2017, end of the year. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars was the top-selling toy line during the nine-week holiday period back in 2016, right? And which makes sense. Force Awakens came out in December 2015, boom, shoots up toy sales. Rogue One came out a year later, boom, toy sales still up. Well, unfortunately, it crashed. In the last decade, you know, entertainment-related toys to movies have grown from 15% to 38%, right? Mm-hmm. Star Wars is the top-selling brand, more than $700 million in sales, but then it dropped precipitously. It's down 47%. Star Wars gear that was shipped in the 7 months leading up to The Last Jedi, down 40% compared to the 7 months leading up to Rogue One. Off 56% for the same period of time ahead of Force Awakens. And these numbers are based off Panjiva. It's a data company that tracks all the shipping containers that come to U.S. ports that are then sent to Walmart, Amazon, every other retailer in the country.
Right.
So those are pretty good numbers. That's a bad sign. That's a bad sign. You know, you could say that kids don't play with toys like they used to, and to a degree that is true, but again, they were selling like gangbusters just a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and overall, the industry, toy-related, movie-related toys have gone up over the past 10 years, so it's not like it was a dead market. This is a big drop, and now Disney's got to pivot and go, okay, what are we doing? What are we doing here? How can, because you can't have the box office continuing to crumble. You can't mm-hmm. fail in China, and you can't have your toy sales crater. These things can't happen.
Right, and let's not get into what happened with Battlefront 2.
Right.
On the video game side.
Right, Exactly. And when you look at their fiscal report, their earnings report for 2017, Star Wars is a big deal to that company, and not mm-hmm. necessarily just in movies and merchandise. That's nice. People always focus on movies, the movie industry, and the merchandise side of Disney, right?
Right.
Well, the fact is, that's not what makes the money for Disney. They make some money, mm-hmm. but out of the four categories that make money for Disney, movies is number three, mm-hmm. merchandise is number four. Right. Okay, number one is media networks, cable, mm-hmm. TV, all that kind of fun stuff. That's number one.
Yeah,
by a long shot, that made them about $23.5 billion in 2017.
Hmm.
That's number one. That was down 1% from 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is their parks and resorts. Yep. And people always forget that. You want to talk about the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
That's what Disney, you know, that is going to probably pass the media networks in the next mm-hmm. couple of years, I'm guessing, just the way the cable TV is going and whatnot.
Yeah.
The parks and resorts made them $18.4 billion last year. That is up 8% of the four categories of revenue. That is the only one that went up. All the rest went down.
Hmm.
Okay. And they've already released a new Star Wars Land. Mm-hmm. They're going to release a new Star Wars Land in 2019
right.
at Hollywood Studios. They've announced that they're going to make this massive hotel that is 100% immersive Star Wars hotel, where mm-hmm. you feel like you are in the Star Wars universe and everyone is wow. themed to Star Wars. The people that work there all are acting like they're in Star Wars.
Hmm.
It's 100% immersive. Yeah. So Disney is they're doubling down on Star Wars for their parks and resorts with the hotel and the Star Wars lands. I mean, this is huge. And as we look at the numbers, parks and resorts,
mm-hmm.
that's their big driver.
Yeah.
So they need Star Wars to do well.
Oh, yeah.
They need it to do well because the parks and resorts are going to really be leaning on it mm-hmm. a lot, the way Universal yeah. leaned on the Harry Potter worlds to drive a lot of business for them.
Mm-hmm.
And third is the studio entertainment movies. That made $8.3 billion. Compared to $18.5 billion, the parks and resorts. That's mm-hmm. the difference we're talking in money. And by the way, that $8.3 billion, that was down 11% from last year. Consumer products and interactive media, that's where the toys are. That's where Marvel Comics is, by the way. That's where Marvel Comics is. That only made $4.8 billion. That's the smallest of all four categories, and that was down 13%. So that also ties into Marvel Comics as well and their sales issues. But even in this earnings report, they said that, hey, consumer products and interactive media, the reason why that happened was largely because of decreased sales of merchandise based on Star Wars, Frozen, and Finding Dory.
Hmm.
They had increased sales of Cars and Spider-Man.
Of course.
So Disney needs to figure out what they want to do going forward. They need to figure out how they want to brand Star Wars, what they want to target. And I get Disney.
Mm-hmm.
They know princess movies. Frozen is testament to that. That's what they do.
Oh, yeah.
Disney is really good at creating franchises based around very good female characters. That's their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much at making characters based around good male characters. They have a few. I mean, Aladdin was a good movie, but that's been like how long ago now?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of good male villains.
Mm-hmm. Not so many good franchises based around male heroes.
Right.
It just, there haven't been many. That's just not Disney's thing.
Was Tangled a Disney movie?
It was a Disney movie with Rapunzel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the guy in that. He was pretty cool.
He was pretty good.
Yeah.
So you look at Star Wars. I don't
even remember his name, but right. I like that guy.
I mean, you look at the toy sales. Toy sales, historically, Star Wars toy sales were primarily targeted to boys, though anyone could buy them, mm-hmm. obviously, and I'm sure everyone did, but they were the number one focus was boys and then everyone else after.
Right.
And I would say that's the same thing with Cars as well. Yeah. Same thing with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And those all are up.
Yeah.
What's down? Finding Dory, Frozen, Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, okay, not Star Wars, but Finding Dory and for sure Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily targeting girls. And Star Wars, it's obvious that Disney has gone to where they feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at The Last Jedi. Your main heroes, Princess Leia,
mm-hmm.
Rey, and Laura Dern's character, I draw a blank on her name.
Holdo, I think.
Thank you.
One of those Star Wars
movies. Right. So those are your three main heroes. And that's very, that is vintage Disney. Mm-hmm. No doubt. So what do you have to get boys who are going to buy your toys?
Oh, don't forget Rose.
Who is also very accomplished, very successful in the movie. She's a successful hero. Yeah. She sets the standard. She inspires Finn, right? Mm-hmm. So she does the rally the troop moment. So that's she's right. So four, right?
Mm-hmm.
So little boys, what do they have? What do they have? The ones that you know used to power the Star Wars franchise. What are you going to get them interested in? What characters? You have none. Unfortunately, in The Last Jedi, you have Finn, who is a clown. Nobody's going to take him seriously. He's, to no discredit to the actor, he's a fine actor. It's just they write that character as a clown. You never take him seriously. He's a joke.
Yeah, and he's stuck on the 40-minute subplot to nowhere.
Right, so. and fails.
Mm-hmm. And gets a lot of people killed.
Exactly. you have, what's his name, Poe?
Poe, yeah.
Who is shown to be an idiot.
Very handsome, but...
Very handsome, but stupid.
Yeah.
Who's stupid, and who is literally wrong at every single turn, is 100% wrong, and then gets basically his punk card pulled by Laura Dern and Princess Leia.
Yeah.
So he's just an idiot. So no little kid or boy is going to watch that character and be like, yeah, I want to be like him. He's a moron, you know?
Yeah, and he should have... What he did, he should have been shot and thrown into space.
Right,
that's,
exactly.
That's neither here nor there.
And three, Kylo Ren, who is like that... annoying emo kid who wears the black trench coat, sits in the corner of a classroom that nobody likes. So no kid wants to be that kid either.
Yeah.
So whereas compare and contrast, you also have Han Solo who is broken and bitter and dead. Luke Skywalker who's broken, bitter, and dead.
Mm-hmm.
So who does that leave? So girls have Rey, Leia, Laura Dern's character, Rose.
They did have Princess Leia.
Well, but she's not dead yet. Not yet.
Okay,
in the movie,
around,
she's not
she'll
dead
be around
yet.
For 5 minutes, and then she'll be dead.
So they have four great characters to choose from.
And Holdo's dead, too.
Oh, yeah, she is dead, didn't she? She died. It's a lot of three. Boys have none.
True.
They have none. So what do you? Whereas in the original trilogy, girls had Princess Leia, who was pretty kick-ass in the original trilogy. Everyone seems to forget that. She was pretty kick-ass. Yeah. And boys had Han Solo, and Luke Skywalker. They had Obi-Wan Kenobi, who was like the uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that everyone likes, and Darth Vader, who is the big badass.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a plethora of choices.
Yeah.
So what Disney's done now is given girls a plethora of choices and boys none.
Yeah.
And now you see your toy sales crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, popularity in the franchise is waning because you're handling it like a traditional Disney property, which it isn't.
Yeah.
So what they might want to do is kind of dial it back a little bit and refocus on how they're presenting the product because it still can succeed without a doubt. There's still plenty of people who like it, but I have this feeling that a lot of Star Wars success is based off of parents who grew up with Star Wars forcing their kids to see the movies.
Yeah.
Not so much kids forcing parents to see the movie, which is what my generation did. We forced our parents to go see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's the opposite. And again, I don't know. I've not taken a survey. I can just tell you based on what I know. I mean, like, looking at, I have two sons, 13 and 11, and I mean, it's not like they hate Star Wars. It's not like they're going to, like, throw a brick through a window if you make them watch the movie. But they don't, I took them. I forced them to go see the movie. None of them really, they're just whatever.
Yeah.
They don't.
They're not into it.
They're into Marvel movies.
Yeah,
that's
the
what they think
audience,
are cool.
Is what you're saying.
They like the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah.
They like, for example, my boys, both of them love and their friends. We took a whole mess of them. They all like Jumanji with The Rock more. I mean, these are the stuff that they're into. But I mean, if you're a boy, a tween, or a teen, who characters are you going to get into more? Kevin Hart and The Rock in Jumanji, or Poe and Finn in Star Wars? Really? Is it even a choice?
Not really, and that's I mean, for The Last Jedi, like I understand, you know, The Force Awakens, that was a big deal.
It was
the big return of Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
And even with that, it limped to that $2.6 billion.
Yes, it did.
But it still made $2 billion. That's a lot of money.
And that's no joke.
Yeah, that is no joke at all.
Much respect.
Exactly. So you know, it I understand there was going to be some drop off.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
However, the trend does not look good if it's dropping this much. And let's not forget that the traditional wisdom, well, traditional 2 years, but you know, 2 years ago was the wisdom, but now it's not, is that when Star Wars released a movie, you don't challenge Star Wars.
Right.
And Sony, of all the studios in the world, decided they were going to toss out Jumanji the week after Star Wars.
Balls of steel to do that.
Oh, yeah. And they, you know what's still in the top five after almost a month?
Jumanji.
You know what wasn't after 3 weeks? Star Wars.
That's amazing. Jumanji punched up out of its weight class like a boss.
Oh, yeah. That shouldn't happen.
No, that should not. All. That should not happen. Star Wars should have destroyed him.
And you know what? You know what Sony announced? It's like, yeah, we're thinking about putting a Jumanji sequel after the next one.
Yeah. Don't blame them. Don't blame them.
Yep.
And to make things worse, now you got Disney wanting to release a Star Wars movie every year.
Mm-hmm.
They might. Not only do they need to refocus how they present them, what characters they create,
mm-hmm.
what they focus on, what messages they're sending,
mm-hmm.
You also may not want to release one every year.
Yeah.
That might be too much. And I know people say, well, what about Marvel Studios? They release whenever. Yeah, totally different, because Marvel movies are they are completely different genres. They're all in a shared world, but they're essentially different worlds. Like the world of Wakanda ain't the world of Asgard, which ain't the world of Spider-Man, which mm-hmm. isn't, you know, the world of Iron Man,
yeah.
which isn't the world of Captain America. They all have mm-hmm. very different genres. Some are spy movies, some are street-based movies, some are sci-fi movies, some are fantasy movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're all different. Star Wars is still Star Wars. It's not like Marvel Studios.
Yeah. Any possible fatigue with Marvel is that they tell the same story over and over and over and over again, but they
right.
dress it up differently, so that's what makes it more acceptable.
Right. Well, you can't do that with Star Wars.
No, not really. And Star Wars, especially in the fact that they are still riding off of nostalgia, because what's
yes.
the next movie? A Han Solo origin
right.
story. Which still doesn't have a trailer, and
nope.
it's supposed to release in May.
It's going
to
be isn't it released today in the Super Bowl? It's
supposed to.
Yeah.
It's
we'll see.
Rumored.
We'll see.
And that entire film has been a giant disaster.
With the main actor taking acting lessons during filming?
Yeah, and them firing the two directors 3 weeks before they finished.
Yeah.
And then Ron Howard coming in, which, I mean, I like Ron Howard. He's a good director. He's
sure.
proven that he can do great stuff.
Oh, sure.
But having him reshoot pretty much the entire movie.
Pretty much, I mean.
Yeah, and then it also speaks to Star Wars's, or maybe not Star Wars, Kathleen Kennedy's problem
yep.
of not being, like Dan Didio, a good coach.
Yes.
Taking talent.
Yes. She's the opposite of Kevin Feige.
she's not going to be the one replacing Bob Iger when
oh,
he leaves.
Oh, God, no. No, happen. No, no, that won't happen.
She picked Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the people who did 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie, known for improv.
Absolutely.
Comedy.
Not a secret.
Absolutely not. That's what their entire career is based on. And we can argue all day about whether a Han Solo movie needs to be more comedic or not.
Fair point.
That's not the issue here. It's the issue that she didn't think they were right, but still hired them anyway.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and
all.
Then waited until the end of... near the end of shooting to fire them and just scrapped everything they did.
Yeah, that's terrible. That should get you fired.
Yeah, and let's not forget Colin Trevorrow fired from episode 9.
Yes.
They didn't push that back because they fired the director. They pushed that back because Carrie Fisher died.
Right, right.
Showing where their priorities are at.
Correct.
And they're lucky they got JJ back.
Oh, absolutely.
Because now they have to pay Paramount a crap ton of money because he yeah. was signed with them to do another film.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a great business right there, having to give your competitors money
yeah.
for a director.
Yeah.
Then there's Lord Miller. They fired Josh Trank off of Rogue One. They pretty much kicked Gareth Edwards off of Rogue One during reshoots
mm-hmm.
and reshot the entire third act of that film. But he finished that movie.
Correct.
And then they changed it. That's what they do in Hollywood these days.
Right. Yes.
So they need to get it together and quickly.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, and there's no reports of this, but I am entirely sure that the things that were wrong with The Last Jedi are the things that they forced Rian Johnson to do. Because I think he wanted to tell a different story. But also, Disney said, well, you have to throw in the Millennium Falcon Last Minute Rescue.
Right.
Because that, people
need
know
to see
that.
There
also needs to be a bunch of stuff from Empire Strikes Back. That doesn't make any sense.
Yep, nope.
Visual references.
Yep, got to put it in.
Yeah, and, and you know, we can't have anything bad happen to our female character.
Nope.
Or have her turn evil.
Nope.
Would have been more interesting.
Oh, my God. If they had turned, I'm going to use, just so everyone knows, you know, I'm a huge wrestling fan, so I will use wrestling terms all the time when talking about comics or movies. Mm-hmm. That's just how my brain works. If she had done, if Rey had pulled a heel turn, I would have popped huge. Dude, I would have popped so big. I would have gone insane. I would have loved the movie. I would have freaked out. She might have become my favorite character because Rey is a heel. I think she's so, like a lot of wrestlers, as a babyface, they're so bland and generic and vanilla and have zero personality and zero interest. That's what she is right now. She's tapioca pudding. Served at a retirement home. That's what she is. But as a heel, as a bad guy. And it would have flipped the script. It would have taken the traditional story and flipped it on its head, which they were trying to do by making the Luke Skywalker character a girl and by trying to make her parents nobodies versus, you know, Darth Vader. So, but those are making, turning a male character into a female, that's what like a 6-year-old would do. That's not creative.
Yeah.
And then making her character's nobody versus Luke Skywalker. Okay, now we're getting there. Now we're getting there, right? Now we're starting to be a little bit more, it's not crazy creative, but at least it's more creative than just simply changing the sex and saying, I'm done.
Yeah.
I made it different. That you're at least trying to do something, but to make her heel, to make her the villain, would have completely taken what we expect from Star Wars, the Luke Skywalker story, and just flipped it on its head. I think that would have, I think the movie would have been incredibly popular. I think a lot of people would have been going nuts about it. It would have created a huge buzz. I think it would have sold better. I think they missed a golden opportunity. They should have just done a double turn. That's what they call it in wrestling. Rey goes heel. Kylo Ren can either stay heel and you have a superpower team, or you flip him babyface and make him the good guy. Not total good guy, but maybe like the reluctant good guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And you solve your problem of not having a cool character that boys might want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Rey's going to be cool as a heel. She's going to be cool as a bad guy. Mm-hmm. She's going to be way cooler as a bad guy. Trust me. No doubt.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a huge missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Or at least, I mean, there's a theme in the movie of balance. So having them together, if she was the light to his dark and they were trying to make it work, that would be interesting.
That
would
have been interesting as well, to have some tension, but then working together despite the tension.
Exactly.
That would have also been interesting.
Yeah.
I agree.
But they didn't do that because it's Star Wars and there has to be a good guy and there has to be a bad guy. And it's
Yeah. It's just, no, not happening. So anyhow, be interesting to see where they go from here.
Oh, yes, it will. I'm not predicting great things for Solo, personally.
Oh, I'm not either. I don't think that's, I think it's not, it might be their first bomb.
I don't know. Well,
I probably won't bomb because it's Star
compared
Wars.
To
but
what they've done before.
I don't think it'll earn what Rogue One earned.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, Rogue One was a great movie. I don't think it'll hit what Rogue One hit.
Yeah. The fact that they still haven't pushed it back to December is beyond me.
I know. It's
and
surprising.
You know what? They may be buying Fox, but Fox knew. That's why they pushed Deadpool up.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Because they know Star Wars is weak.
And now that they're buying Fox, I'm surprised they haven't, you know, move the schedules around a little bit, but you know,
they've still
it is what
got a
it is.
Year where
right.
Fox is by itself. So.
That's true. That's true.
Milk that money.
That's right. And speaking of money, also, I want to take a peek at the sales charts. I love breaking down sales charts. We don't have the sales charts yet for January.
Right.
Trust me, when it comes out, we will be talking about it.
All right.
Love sales charts because I think sales charts. It's good to review comics and talk about the quality. That's important, obviously.
Right.
But the business side of it is also very important because that, honestly, you know, whether we, either of us, or anyone listening likes a comic,
right.
It's kind of irrelevant if it doesn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some titles that, for some reason, we'll talk about, publishers are willing to just carry despite it hemorrhaging money. But in general, people want to, if it doesn't sell, it's not going to continue being a viable product. It's just the way it is. So it's always good to take a peek. And plus, I am utterly fascinated at Marvel's crumbling in the sales chart. Marvel, a year after New 52 had DC dead on the ground. They could have broken, they could have just stepped on their neck and snapped them and put them down for good. Marvel was unstoppable. I mean, really, they had the moment to do a total kill shot on DC. But instead, for some reason, Axel Alonso's like, we could out-stupid the New 52.
Yep.
And unveiled the all-new, all-different Marvel Point One, blah, 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 how many different names they gave it, initiative. Mm-hmm. And gave DC new life.
Yeah.
It's shocking. Oh, and that's probably one reason why Axel Alonso is no longer the editor in chief.
that
will cost you your job. So looking at the sales charts, what's interesting in general, I think the direction that Marvel has gone in with their all new, all different Point One, whatever initiative, has proven to drive away a lot of readers.
Mm-hmm.
Drive away a lot more readers than it has brought in. And DC rebounding has not been able to bring enough readers back to set off the readers that Marvel has driven away.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the sales numbers historically. This is shocking. Okay, taking December sales numbers, right? Mm-hmm. The top 300 comics in dollar sales, which this is amazing. Sold 222 million, right? Now, dollar sales don't mean as much to me as unit sales because mm-hmm. comics are more expensive now.
Right.
But even given the fact that comics are more expensive now, compare December 2017 to December of the previous year, minus 23%. Minus 23%. And that's with DC making a comeback in readers.
Mm-hmm.
Minus 23%. The same month 5 years earlier, minus 11%.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, and this is with comics costing more.
Yeah.
More. This is even with an increase in cover price over the past 5 years. Still minus 11%. Same month 10 years earlier. Now you're talking a massive difference in cover price, right?
Mm-hmm.
Massive difference in cover price versus 10 years ago, minus 2%.
Right.
Same month 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking, I mean, comics are like five times what they were 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Minus 4%
oh, wow.
dollar share. That's stunning. Marvel has shed so many readers that even DC coming back hasn't been able to turn the tide.
Yeah.
You look at unit sales. Jeez. Dude, unit sales is even worse. Same month previous year for December, same month previous year,
mm-hmm.
minus 22% unit sales.
All right.
Same month 5 years earlier, minus 17% unit sales.
Mm-hmm.
Same month 10 years earlier, minus 18%. Same month 20 years earlier, minus 36%. You are hemorrhaging readers like mad.
Yeah.
And that's with DC rebounding,
yeah.
which they have.
Oh, yeah.
That is how much Axel Alonso fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, they
destroyed the entire market.
It's amazing. they were publishing comics for readers, for an audience that isn't there.
Yeah.
And now you look at December. This is amazing. Top five comics. DC has five of the top five comics. Four of the top five comics. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Doomsday Clock, number one, selling 158,000 issues.
Hmm.
Dark Knight Metal, number four. Even on the number four issue, still 152,000 units. That's strong for the number four issue. They're selling great. Then you had Jean Grey, Return of Jean Grey, number one.
Yeah.
In their 145,000 units. And then number four spot, Batman. Number five spot, Batman. Number six spot, Batman White Knight. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You look at the top 25. Top 25. And Marvel only has nine spots in the top 25.
Yeah.
That's shocking, isn't it? DC has, my goodness, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of the top 25.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, but of course, what gives cause for concern is that the minute you get out of like the number 18 spot, normally the top 25 used to be selling good numbers. Mm-hmm. Now at the number 18 spot, you're already in the 40,000 range. Mm-hmm. That's a concern for your overall industry. What I find interesting is I like to look at, you know, we all know the titles that sell well. It's Batman. Mm-hmm. I mean, looking at all of the top-selling titles for Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, for DC. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The top 9 titles for DC, all Batman.
Mm-hmm.
All Batman. And then you got Superman, Flash, Justice League, Flash, Justice League.
Yep.
Superman, action. So,
which, that's kind of a surprise. He's never been that big of a seller.
He never has.
No, at least not for the last couple of years.
Agreed, so. But when your industry starts shrinking so much, you know, he's selling 48, you know, Superman number 37 sold 48,000 copies. That's good enough to put you in the top, the number 20 position.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm glad to see Flash selling well. That makes me happy because I like Flash. But what I find interesting is... why are there some comics still being published? Could you tell me why? I don't understand. We have this is it just blows my mind. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 27,
mm-hmm.
22,000 copies. What? Really? Jessica Jones number 15, 18,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Fist 75. 17,000 copies.
Right.
She-Hulk 160, 17,000. Jean Grey 10, 16,900. Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider, 16,800.
Oh, that's still going?
I know!
Oh, wow.
Falcon number 3. Art the third issue, and it's already selling 14,475 units. What? What is going on? Gwenpool 23, 13,931 units. Captain Marvel, the title that just for some reason won't die. Captain Marvel 127, 13,229 units. What is going on? It is hilarious to see some of the numbers. I am unsure what Marvel is thinking. I really don't think
they do anymore.
It makes no sense to me. Of course, you know, DC, of course, has a few of theirs. Like, oh no, another one from Marvel. It makes no sense. America, mm-hmm. number 10.
Right.
7,971 copies. I get it. It makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tout that to the press. It's 7,900. Nobody wants to read it.
Yeah.
That 7,000 is probably like the family, friends, and high school of the writer and artist. You know what I mean? Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 26, 7,155 units. What?
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't make sense. DC, who used to historically have these really low-selling titles and just keep them along on life support, doesn't even have as many.
Yeah.
They have a few. Mm-hmm. Not quite as bad as Marvel, though. I mean, they really don't. I'm talking the 7,000 range.
Yeah.
I think the worst for DC is like Cyborg 19 is 8,970. They could probably let that go. It's not working. You put him with the Justice League. You made him a founding member. It's not working. Just put him back with the Teen Titans where he's clearly more popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blue Beetle 16,900. That's not working either. But they don't seem to have as many. A new Superman number 18, 10,000 units. It's like... So DC has a few that they could probably get rid of, some holdovers from the New 52 they could probably mm-hmm. sweep away. But Marvel seems to have a lot more of these comics that are just selling sub 15,000 units
mm-hmm.
that are just like, what are you doing?
Right.
And they have a lot of them. And these are big name characters too, mm-hmm. which I don't get.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah,
I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss for what exactly. I guess with Cebulski now being the editor in chief, maybe mm-hmm. we'll see their own version of Rebirth. But here's the deal: you need to double down on what people want to read,
mm-hmm.
And I don't think you really want to make your comics super political. That's also a bad idea. In the entertainment industry, I'm not saying no entertainment, nothing in the entertainment industry can ever have anything. That's not true. X-Men sold like gangbusters in the 80s and 90s, and it obviously had a social message. Duh. Okay?
It had it since the beginning.
But it didn't club you over the head with it either. It was one that basically everyone could agree on, that people should just not try to kill each other.
Yeah.
You know, these are basic things I think everyone agrees on, right? But it seems like under Alonso, Marvel got super, super, super political, to the point where, why are you going to actively turn off at least 50% of your potential readership? I'd say more than 50%, because I'm a I'm not a conservative person at all. And even it was way too more left wing for me. And I tend to be more left of center on most things than not. And even I was like, okay, we're just going crazy. So, I mean, I think you're writing comics that appeal to like 20% of the population. Like, why do you, that it reflects in the sales numbers too. I mean, you're obviously, why don't you try to write for 100% of the population? I mean, obviously you can't. It's okay to take a few titles that are niche, that target a small audience. That's okay. But in general, your mainstream titles, they should be trying to cast a wide net. And I don't know how wise that is to really try to piss off a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the biggest problem is that, well, maybe not the biggest problem, it's one of many problems, is that they decided that the way they were going to increase diversity and attract new people was by either killing or just destroying their regular heroes.
Yes.
Like, they didn't just want Amadeus Cho to become the Hulk. They wanted to kill Bruce Banner.
Yep.
And then bring him back a couple months later, of course.
Right.
And they didn't want the Falcon to be Captain America. They wanted Steve Rogers to become a Nazi.
Right.
Which, in a year of bad PR, that was probably the worst.
That was just tone deaf, and especially because he's created by a Jewish comic book creator, made it even worse optics. I mean, it's bad optics no matter what, but that just kind of compounded it too.
Yeah,
you know.
And there were all these theories about, well, maybe it's like the Ultimate Captain America or something like that, who just went too far,
right?
Or it's the Grand Director again or something like that. All of those things would have worked.
Yeah,
but they chose the not just the laziest, but the dumbest possible solution. And they had to release a statement saying, don't worry, it's going to go back to normal.
Before the big event started.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, just terrible. Let it go. And that was, honestly, if Nick Spencer had just been able to shut his mouth and say at the beginning, look, I hear your concerns, just trust me.
Yep.
And just said nothing about it, then it probably would have, it wouldn't have worked as a story, but it would have worked as a... It wouldn't have been such a PR nightmare.
Right. Agreed.
But he couldn't do that. I mean, hell, none of Marvel's writers can do that anymore. They can't keep their mouth shut.
No.
And they turn off people. It's like, I mean, look, some of these people are assholes.
Oh, absolutely. Internet's full of just trolls that are just jerks.
And I get that. Like, you know, when you say to someone who's talking about they don't like there being Mexican characters because Mexicans are, you know, whatever Trump said about him today,
right?
Then it's smart to go, well, then don't buy it. I don't want your money.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
Don't buy the comic book. But like, when you're getting into people who, like, sure, their opinions might be a little ignorant, but they're not coming at it from a bad place,
right?
It's like, you can't just attack these people.
Not everything requires a sledgehammer response.
Yeah,
I agree. I think you touched on it perfectly. The problem with Marvel is they decided to just give a middle finger to all their established readers and kill off and butcher all the characters that they loved and replace them with new ones and expected them to go, thank you, give me the middle finger, and then I'll say thank you for it. Which is what DC did with the New 52.
Yeah,
I think DC right now is doing much better.
Mm-hmm.
they brought back all the characters that we love.
Yeah.
They brought back the DCU. Mm-hmm. And then they decided we're going to do the New Age of Heroes line of comics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at them now. It's Damage, The Silencer, Sideways, The Terrifics, The Immortal mm-hmm. Men, The Curse of Brimstone, New Challenges, and The Unexpected. They are clearly more New 52-esque. I hated the New 52, and that used mm-hmm. to be an insult. I'm not trying to insult these comics by calling them New 52-esque. Yeah. I'm saying that because they're different. Mm-hmm. They're establishing. They're trying to create new characters. Mm-hmm. They're trying to create more diverse characters, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And this is exactly what I was saying they should have done back when they were doing the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I was saying they should do. And, oh, look, I love being proven right because this is what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Don't give me the middle finger and piss all over everything I mm-hmm. like. Let me keep my comics. Let me keep my comics that, by the way, the majority of your readership likes.
Yeah.
My comics, the ones that dominate the sales charts.
Mm-hmm.
Let me keep those. And then you introduce new characters,
right.
different characters, mm-hmm. and try to introduce new things, more diverse things, in addition to the mm-hmm. comics you already have.
Right.
This way, you don't piss off the majority of your established readership base.
Yeah.
You don't. And that way, the people that like new stuff, mm-hmm. right?
They can get the new stuff.
Get the new stuff. More unique or different or mm-hmm. diverse and whatever else, they get that as well. Everybody's happy. It's a win-win.
Right.
It's a win-win. And all these comics, these under the New Age of Heroes, I probably won't like them all.
Yeah.
But I won't care. I'm not going to say it's stupid because you know what? I got my mm-hmm. Superman with his underwear on the outside.
Yep.
I got Bruce Wayne. I got the real Aquaman. I got the real Wonder Woman. I got the real, the list goes on and on. Booster Gold, Ted Kord. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on.
Right, right.
Okay? This is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Marvel screwed up. And Marvel's going to have to do Sobolski's going to have to, if they want to come back, they're going to have their established mainstream line of mm-hmm. comics with all the characters that we love
mm-hmm.
and then do what DC's doing with the New Age of Heroes, try to sprinkle in some. And yeah, I'm sure most of these comics are going to fail and be terrible sellers. But you know what? One or two will succeed.
Yeah.
One or two will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've made your universe that much richer.
Yeah. That's right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Your next Arrowverse guest stars.
Exactly. We'll see how they do it.
Yeah. And I just want to say on Marvel's end, what baffles me even more is that I think there are two instances where they did like do it in a way where they didn't just screw over everybody's hopes and dreams and their heroes is that when they brought over Miles Morales, he already had a relationship with Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's right.
So mm-hmm. Peter Parker is still Spider-Man.
Yep.
But Miles Morales is also Spider-Man.
Correct.
And with the new Ms. Marvel, like G. Willow Wilson took pains to establish a relationship between her and Carol Danvers.
Carol Danvers, right?
And of the new kind of wave of legacy characters, those two are the ones that they don't sell gangbusters, but they sell fairly well.
Well, Ms. Marvel sells like crap.
Well,
and so does Miles Morales. They both do. But yes,
out of that crop. They're the best sellers. They're the ones the that least, everybody know. Well,
they're the best, least worst selling. Quotes, yeah. Yeah,
they're the best. They're the ones. I mean, of the internet cultural consciousness,
yes.
They're the only ones who have made any dent at all.
Yes, so agreed.
I think that has something to do with that. There's no animosity towards those characters because they're not replacing anybody.
Right. Well, there was talk that they might want to kill Peter Parker off and replace him with Miles Morales. And there are these internet fans that say this. And to these people, I say, you're high. Yeah. And the reason for that is this. It's really simple. You look at the sales charts for mm-hmm. December. This is it's self-evident. Okay. Yeah. So let's look at, first of all, Ms. Marvel, she's selling around 27,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not good,
not good.
At least it's not 7,000 units.
Yeah, it's
like
not 7,000.
Moon Girl.
She's selling 20,000 more than Moon Girl.
But Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
So he sold 26,954 units.
Less than Ms. Marvel.
Okay. And let's compare. This is why they will never kill off Peter Parker.
No.
Because you go to the top of the chart,
mm-hmm.
compare and contrast Amazing Spider-Man 792 61,994 titles. Yeah. That's the number 10 selling title. Mm-hmm. The number 13 title, Amazing Spider-Man 793, 53,260 units. So in the top 15 are two Peter Parker titles. And by the way, you look at the top 15, there's one, two, three, four, five, six. There's only six Marvel titles in the mm-hmm. top 15. And three of the six, 50%, two Amazing Spider-Man titles and the Amazing Spider-Man Venom Inc. Alpha title.
Mm-hmm.
So you're crazy.
Yeah.
You're crazy by saying you kill Peter Parker off. That would be stupid. They need to somehow... Sobolski just has his hands full.
Yeah.
It can't be done. I mean, DC came back. True. But they need to make a concerted effort to really reestablish their mainstream big name characters.
And part of DC's comeback was that they apologized.
And they Marvel said,
we messed up, and Marvel will never apologize for anything.
I agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree.
And Marvel has more problems than just that. There's the constant relaunches and
I agree.
And continuity changes that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, we're big events. Like, DC's hasn't really had any big events since they did Rebirth. I mean, Doomsday Clock is a big event, but it's not really
right.
One. Dark Knight's Metal is one, but that's their first in 2 years.
Right.
2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little mini crossover with Batman and the Flash, but that wasn't really an event. It was just two titles.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Marvel should just stop. Yeah. They were supposed to.
Yes. Yes. They need to cool it on the big events and the random changes that they make. It just doesn't make sense.
I could go without a big event for Marvel for a good 4 years and miss anything at all.
God, yes. No, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, let's hit the comics. We're going to do this in part two of the podcast, all right?
All right.
So we'll fade out now and return with a fun collection of comics to debate and discuss.